How do you basically get the machines to talk to the machines? So the future, as I say, is multidisciplinary. If you are in a marketing team, you better be talking to customer success. Customer success can no longer be seen as just part of sales, because all of the insights that they get from either QBRs or complaints or support tickets, that is all data to be mined by marketing.
Hey, fellow marketers, welcome to another episode of the Marketing Careers Podcast presented by themarketinghelp.co. Now, it's time to get into another episode in our season. This season is focused on helping marketers navigate generative AI disruption. And what a great point that was made by our guest in the open about the importance of being a multidisciplinary marketer, especially as we integrate AI into more and more of our daily tasks. Now, our next guest, his name is George Chimiti. And George has made some amazing impacts as a tech strategist, and his focus is on helping brands and clients in the cybersecurity, AI, and machine learning spaces. Now, I would easily consider George someone that you should be following closely, and I think after you listen to this episode, you'll see why, because George definitely shares some amazing insights, analogies, and suggestions that will influence and shape how you think about navigating Gen AI. Plus, he gives a ton of great resources, use cases, and AI tools that you should be checking out and definitely adding to your list of tools to be testing that are included in the show notes. So definitely check those out. So let's get right into it. Here is my conversation with George Chimiti. Welcome to the episode.
Hey, very happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, George. So excited to dig into this conversation. Just again, love the content that you're producing. But maybe take a couple of minutes here. Let everyone know kind of your story, your career path, and how you got into the world of marketing, et cetera. Maybe just take a couple of minutes to walk us through your background.
Absolutely. I have been many things in many different lifetimes, including rock climbing instructor and wedding photographer. But writing has always been my first love. It's how I work through my thoughts. It's how I make sense of the world. And after getting a master's of fine arts in creative writing, I went where creative people go to get health insurance in this country, which is into marketing. So nice. My first gig was as an SEO copywriter. And that sort of married two things. I have been working with technology since my parents paid for coding classes at age 7. I remember in 1994, my dad came home with a bunch of sort of HTML for dummies books and dropped them on the kitchen table and said, you need to learn this. So I've been working with computers. I was very reluctant. I sort of was very, I guess, tech literate, but very reluctant to make that a job. But I had been working with some social media strategy companies very early days before my master's of fine arts. And then when I came out, I kind of had this Venn diagram of someone who could form coherent sentences very clearly and somebody who was familiar with the way the web worked, or at that time SEO, and that was 2013. And then quickly went from there into social media strategy for B2B companies, because that was relatively new at the time. You know, everyone discovered, I'm old enough to remember when Facebook went out from just .edu email addresses and into the public, and the, you know, it exploded, and it was, but it really wasn't until like 2012, 2013 that businesses were like, oh, this is a thing and it's more than just a PR channel and we have to think about how to use it. Right. And so I guess I benefited from that time, and I worked in B2B marketing for an agency that got acquired and sort of progressively became more of a global agency. Worked with a lot of regulated companies like fintech and financial services. And then from there moved into a cybersecurity startup that was specializing in mitigating threats in social media. That seemed like a pretty good lateral move. And among the many things at that company, they were trying to train social engineering detections, phishing detections on what was then very new in 2019, GPT-2, BERT. These were very early language models, and not even fair to call them large language models, because they were more nonsensical than anything is available today. But then GPT-3 came out in 2020, and that was like a really big watershed moment. And that's when I realized that the future I had imagined for my children was going to be extremely different you know, it wasn't going to be hands on keys. It wasn't just a simple teleological extension of how we use computers today. And I was like, oh, I need to understand this. And so I have essentially been researching, writing about, reading about AI and machine learning nonstop ever since.
Love it. Love it. So, and I know that you've got some perspectives and some experiences that we'd love to share with our audience so that they can better prepare for navigating their, not just their own educations as marketers, but also their introductions to some of this information to their teams, departments, companies, organizations, et cetera. So setting some context, maybe just to get a baseline, you know, in a few sentences, you know, how do you describe generative AI?
Yeah, so machine learning has been around for decades and has always been about data and decisions. How do I take a massive amount of data and at orders of magnitude faster than any human, how can I find patterns? How can I cluster that data? How can I classify it? And then generative AI is new because it is not just training on the data. It is training to understand the underlying mechanics of that data, so that it can generate new data based on that training. So in the case of large language models, trained to understand the semantic underpinnings of human language so that it can generate net new language. So the too long didn't read version is discriminative AI, which is what we were using before, is it a cat? Yes or no. Is it a dog? Yes or no. Generative AI is make me a picture of a cat wearing a sombrero. And because it has, the model has some understanding of what quote unquote catness is and what a sombrero is, it can generate new data from that. And that's really the power of generative AI. When you think about it, especially for marketers, human language and creative expression in the form of images or video, sound, this is like the code base for humanity, everything from cave paintings to the first musical instruments. And so now having machines capable of operating in that code base is really, I think, what is so thrilling and alarming, because we've never had that before.
Right, right. That's a great description, the way that you kind of made that combination there. Now, in your experience in working with, you know, teams yourself, or just what you've researched and seen, you know, can you identify some of the actual disruptive moments that are happening within teams, departments, companies that cause them to say, hey, wait a minute, to your point, there's something that we've identified that's pretty awesome, pretty interesting, pretty scary. You know, so what have been those moments that have caused these companies to identify and then either research more or embrace?
Yeah, I think it was the ability to interact with something that was heretofore very academic, which was a large language model pre-release of ChatGPT, right? This was something that researchers worked on and they tested and you could get early access to as a researcher or as a product developer. But when ChatGPT rolled out, it was first contact with the general population to have a natural language interaction with, behind the scenes, incredible complex software, right? And I think we sort of went through this infatuation and intoxication phase with that. You know, you saw everyone sharing screenshots of like, I asked it to write, you know, a product development guide in the style of a Shakespearean sonnet, you know, and it's like, oh, that's cool with a capital K, but like, I don't really know like how that's going to impact my job. And I think some of that has begun to evaporate, because what we're going to be going through now and into all of next year is business leaders, meaning executive leadership teams, are now aware of the potential, and the downward pressure is going to be now find a way to put this in your process. So I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that either they're on the product side and they're just getting, or even on the services side and they're being told like, whatever we do, it has to have AI in it, right? And so you're going to see a lot of struggle. Do I just like bolt this on? And actually what it comes down to in terms of that disruption is the technology is moving so quickly and is so capable that it's actually not feasible to ingest it or to assimilate it without completely re-architecting your human organization and process. And I think that's going to be not just 2024, I think that's going to be the next 5 years, is huge enterprises, huge teams trying to discover, like, how do I reorganize my team in order to be able to use this technology effectively? Because right now it's still very novel, but I think people are trying to discover how they can use it. And to one point about disruption and infatuation, we are still living through and will continue to live through this idea of optimization. I don't need copywriters anymore, right? I don't need designers anymore. I can just make these machines do it. And I would very much caution against that. And I think we'll talk about that in a moment. But it's like, if you're just going to optimize for cost, you're going to get a cheap result, right? So if your primary motivator is like money and reducing the bottom line, you will get a commensurate level of quality or mediocrity out of it.
Right.
That's my take on the disruption.
And I guess sticking with that point, following through, when you think about some of these companies that may have the over-reliance of it, so you kind of hinted to, if your focus is profit, bottom line, you know, reducing headcount, saving money, well, then you'll get something of that quality. Any other risks that come to mind for any organizations, even those that are using it fairly or adequately, any other risks come to mind when, if there's an over-reliance on usage of these tools?
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line in terms of customer acquisition and profitability, because there is also increased suspicion among the general population, right? Like a lot of surveys coming out now are showing people are more aware of risks of bias. They're more aware of risks of harm. And I would also argue, in a world where everyone is racing to use synthetic media, that authenticity and trust, and especially real world interactions, will be the differentiator, right? So you can either sort of go with the herd and go down that path, but those who can use these technologies more intelligently to enhance their marketing efforts, to increase customer touch points, to increase connection and relationship building, they will win easily.
Right. And I have a question, I guess, on that, to that point, you know, other risks you think about, you mentioned, so you see organizations that have the top-down approach of, yeah, whatever you do, just, you know, bolt on some AI to it. Talk about the risks of an organization that does not invest in the education so that there's at least somebody, whether that's a consultant or someone that is identified internally, to kind of be the task force, whether it's a person or persons, to be able to educate, right? Because imagine, I'm sure you see companies that are making decisions that are only based off of, pieces of information, and they're not fully educating themselves. So, I mean, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's probably twofold. So if you just try to race and bolt it on and you haven't really thought through and you haven't worked with your team and the stakeholders internally, you will trip and you will get wrapped around the axle, to mix the metaphor, and it'll cause so much disruption internally. It will effectively slow you down while your competitors, who may have been more deliberate, you know, either leapfrog you or they just continue to move past. So I wouldn't do that to yourself. The next is a real impact to customers and or perpetuating harm. And I will take that in two ways. So even before you could create images from, you know, just text-based prompts, you know, in cybersecurity, if you were going through stock photos and Adobe Shutterstock, whatever service you want to use, and you were like IT employee at computer, you know, whatever, it was all white men. Like, you would have to, so the bias was already there in that data set, quote unquote data set, even though it was just a collection of photos. So if you just race into Gen AI and you're like, I don't have to pay Shutterstock anymore, I'm just going to use Midjourney or whatever, you run the risk of continuing to perpetuate harm and reinforcing stereotypes and biases that are built into that training data. So now you are like an agent of harm. You're actively alienating your customers in the case of cybersecurity or other things. And then the other part there for the customers is, again, going back to that authenticity. So you know, for example, I was contacting a generative AI presentation tool, and it had a chatbot, you know, support chatbot, which is sort of, it wasn't even like a very sophisticated chatbot. It's sort of like the basic if-then decision tree statements that you see in like HubSpot chatbots and stuff like that. But it immediately connected me with a real person, and that person connected me to one of the engineers. I mean, they're early stage start up enough that they wanted that. That feedback. And but that was like remarkable. Like that's like incredible level of access and trust. And you know, I use that product today for sure. And they are my preferred tool of choice for that application because of that. And so you need to think of the ways of how is it going to augment our teams and how is it going to get us closer to our customers and understanding them faster rather than just let me just move some dollars and cents here and reduce my costs internally.
That's a great perspective because you keep using the word authenticity, which I think is key for marketers because of, I mean, that example of, you know, that trust that was provided to you by that company by not having you go through 16 more if then statements and essentially waste 10 more minutes of your time versus getting right to somebody to have the conversation. Switch to like the tools that you're using, testing. Mm-hmm. You mentioned a couple already. You know, I know that our audience is pretty tuned into, you know, the more common choices, ChatGPT, Bard, et cetera. Are there any other tools that have your interest and that you're testing maybe more aggressively or that you're excited to test more?
Yeah, so there are variations on a theme and then there are sort of new tools. So let me start with the first one. So the first one is, yes, ChatGPT. But if you have ChatGPT Plus, you also have access to their new product, which is GPTs, right? The ability to basically save a use case and a prompt and kind of quote unquote fine tune it. It's not coded, but you're uploading documents and, you know, trying to create prompts that are intended to make the outputs more consistent, right? So for example, you now have the opportunity, instead of like saving these long prompts and then like copy pasting them every time, essentially spinning up a thought partner to help you with a specific use case. So for example, if you're in product marketing, does your brand have a voice and style guide? Do you have previous outputs that like PDFs that you could upload as examples? And so you can narrow those outputs from your prompts to the style that you need. I mean, I think that's extremely powerful, but I do want to be clear. The output should not be anything but viewed as getting you 70% to your end target. It should not be the end state. It's there to get you off the blank page and get you moving to places where you can put your creative energy faster. But now you can control for that, because right now, if you just go into ChatGPT, you're essentially starting from scratch every time, which is rather onerous. And I've joked that I have friends who have, I don't know, they spent like 2 hours tuning a prompt. And I was like, in the time that it took you to do that, you could have just written the thing yourself, right?
Right.
So there's that angle. But then when it comes to some other tools, I think there are a lot of tools that marketers are familiar with, any of the Adobe suite, Canva, like they're all bolting on. And I should be fair, they're not bolting on. Some of them have done deliberate thought process and sort of started folding in AI features, like Canva has Magic Studio, Adobe has Generative Fill, and also has Firefly, which is kind of the free version. So I would experiment with those. And again, it's not going to get you to the end state, right? Because any marketer knows if you're creating an asset, you don't just like get a Midjourney image and that's it, right? You have to like cut it to different specs and different, you know, maybe it's all black, maybe it's all white, maybe it's transparent. Like you're going to still need designers to help you bring it into line with your brand vision, but it can help you get there. Some other tools that I have been experimenting with is 11 Labs for voice cloning. So for example, if you are working with a lot of demo videos or something like that, and you want to, and you have somebody who does that, if you clone their voice, you can basically fine tune the transcript and then it can just read it in their voice and you can cut down production time. Guide, which is spelled G-U-I-D-D-E, is an incredible video demo platform. So you can record your screen. You don't have to narrate. You just like literally do, like you go here, you move the mouse, and you go through the steps of your product, and it will auto-generate a video that's got annotations, the transcript is probably like 80% of the way there, and you can like fine tune it and rename it. It can use a generated voice. You could record your own voice, but that is going to cut production time for demo videos from, you know, like a loom, which might take you like 26 minutes. And then you have to like add the widgets and the highlights and everything down to like, I think I timed it. I think it took me 26 minutes on Loom, and I did it in 6 minutes with Guide. And that was the first time out when I wasn't as familiar with the back end. That is an incredible time savings, right? And again, it's not just doing it for its own sake. It's actually producing valuable material for your product end users and helping you to scale that much faster. You can get to your how-to videos more. I think every time you're like, oh, we should do a how-to video, people sort of roll their eyes because they know how much production is involved in a video. And now you don't need to like dump it into Premiere. You don't need to like sync up audio. You don't need to record it. You don't need to try and get it in one take. I mean, that kind of power is truly incredible. I also use gamma.app, which is the tool that I was previously talking about when I got connected with the engineer. It is a generative AI tool for presentations. So you could say like, I want a presentation about the best AI podcasts, and it could sort of generate a lot of content. It's as biased as any LLM tool. So what I use it for instead is I build the outline to my presentations in just text form, and I can load that in there and it will auto create everything, like all the slides with the titles. And you can tell it like, you need a 3-column table on this slide. And, you know, so it's going to get me like 80% of the way there, and I'm going to fine tune the style. But to anyone listening, I'm sure you, like me, have lost hours of your life trying to align text boxes, trying to make sure everything looks super clean on your PowerPoint slide. And Gamma, everything is aligned. Everything is like equally formatted. It's responsive. You can share it. You can export it as a PPT or a PDF. It's incredible. And I will never go back, because nice. Again, a presentation for a conference talk that might take you 4 hours, 45 minutes in Gamma. Right. And I have not done one presentation where someone isn't like, this is like the most beautiful deck I've ever seen. So again, I wouldn't go back. Now that's to say, like, if you're using Google Workspace or Microsoft Office, you know, both of those providers are working LLM tools into. I haven't been able to test Duet yet in Google or Copilot in Microsoft. So I would just continue to play with those. And the more time you can save, this is the too long didn't read for the entire interview. The more time that you can create to spend your energy on creative production, do that, right? All the like pivot table analysis, all of the text alignment, like all of the garbage that eats and burns your time. And you are just sitting there feeling like, this is such a waste of my time. Like, that's where you really want to apply these tools, because you want to get that human brain power closer to the bone much faster.
I love it. And we'll include links to those tools in the show notes. And, you know, another question here to that is, you know, you kind of hinted on there in your last statement, but extracting that to marketing teams and, you know, buy-in is kind of, we would like to think most companies have it. So like you said, leadership is saying, okay, let's find out ways to work this in. You know, are there tips you have for those teams that are looking to roll it out or to integrate it into their processes in the next year? Aside from what you just said, in terms of, you know, if something is painful, chances are you could probably find an AI tool to help you with making it less painful. Any other tips in terms of the process of integrating AI into their organization?
Yeah, it's going to take stakeholder management, right? Like, this is a very new time, and to think that, oh, I found this great tool, let's use it starting tomorrow for all of our things, is unrealistic. And I think you need to take it case by case. And you also need to be cognizant of your company's IP and data security, right? Like, how is that being handled? So in the case of Guide, for example, like, you can own all of your videos, you can host them locally, stuff like that. I think it's just really important to work with your team very closely and say, like, look, and I don't know if it's a weekly meeting, but it's like, these are the use cases we have. And if you're a marketing leader, you probably don't know where your team is frustrated. Like, oh my God, if I could just get through this thing faster, right? You just know the outcome and the output, right? Like, have that done by next week at this time and we'll review it. So you need to get down in the trenches and understand, like, where are the pain points? And then as a group, like, you should allocate time for researching and understanding and discovering. So maybe part of that meeting every week, and this is literally me thinking off the top of my head, sure, each team member gets to highlight some new tool that they discovered or some new use case that they found on YouTube, or maybe they went to a marketing conference and someone said they used one of these tools. Then think of your test use case. I mean, I think this sounds deliberate and slow, but I don't really know of another way to do it without breaking the processes, because either you'll have team members go rogue and start using tools that you don't know about, and then you're like, wait, why doesn't that look like or sound like what I think it should? Or in the worst case scenario, you have marketing teams go like, oh, I'm just going to provision this on the company credit card, and your information security team doesn't know about it. And then you're sticking in like customer information or something into a tool that they haven't done a risk assessment on. I think that's a huge problem. And again, this is where if you rush like out of a race, your shoelace is untied, you're going to fall on your face. But if you like take the time to train, to be prepared, to get a coach, whatever you need to like feel prepared and like move through it, like you'll get better at it. But you really have to understand, where's the pain today and what can we use to alleviate it and like make the use case known to the wider company and, you know, work through those processes.
Nice. Love it. A big fan of analogy. So I think that's perfect just based on what I've seen with some marketing teams do that of just like get up and go. And then it's,
yeah,
you know, someone starts asking the good questions about security, privacy, and there's no answer.
Well, there's also this joke, especially in cyber marketing, that you can now spot ChatGPT written like webinar copy and stuff, because there's this phrase for whatever reason that ChatGPT will use whenever you are putting in a cybersecurity use case. And I kid you not, it will always begin with, in an ever evolving digital landscape. Like, those words are the red flag. Like, as soon as people see them, they're like, ChatGPT. And then they don't take you seriously.
Right.
And then, you know, there is both the near term damage, they didn't register or they didn't download the thing. And then there's the longer term, like your credibility is on the line.
Yep. Nice. I'm sure there's a list somewhere of all those ChatGPT phrases to keep in mind. So lastly, you know, before we hit a break here, is just around budgeting. So we talked about the tools. Obviously, tools can be tested. You know, if you throw your team at it, like you said, you know, find a tool. If it's free, great. If not, you know, keep it $20 a month, whatever, just to kick the tires. You know, how should marketing teams be thinking about budgeting beyond just the tools? Because, you know, there we're talking about, you know, less than $100 a month. Any other things that should be considered?
Yeah, well, like I said before, all the tools that you're using today, Salesforce, Slack, whatever, Canva, Photoshop, like they're going to start integrating these features. And sometimes those features are great as part of the license. And sometimes it requires extra. So you should understand like how much am I paying for these seats right now, and like work with your customer success manager. Like, you know, can you scope out like what it would cost for, you know, additional capabilities or whatever? But aside from tools, I really think you also need to budget for learning and professional development. And there are many ways to go about that. I mean, you could give your team lots of autonomy and they could kind of go find their own courses and say, like, I really want to take this. Will the company pay for that? Sometimes they're online courses, sometimes not. Okay. But I would also say maybe come together as a team, again, as you've thought about your use cases and identify knowledge gaps. Like, man, I am really behind on generative AI as it relates to Photoshop or generative fill or how I can use it for spec creation in Midjourney. I really need to, you know, the whole graphics team needs to learn that, or video or whatever. If you are going to hire consultants, I definitely check their credentials. Jeff, definitely check the curriculum or the format. So I am a big proponent of someone should not just come in for a high fee and talk at you, right? This is cynically what I think a lot of the big four does, right? Like, they charge like $250,000 for a 70 slide PowerPoint, basically. So the way I would structure it is they've got to come in, they've got to work with you on whatever your use case is, and you have to have not just retainer, which is usually a part of it, but also like a check-in. So I'm a proponent of, when I work with teams, I walk through whatever their use case is. We basically assign homework, like you need to go try and do X, Y, and Z by the next time we meet. Then I work with them on, what is that time frame? Is it like 14 days from now? Is it like a month from now? But you got to come back and check the work. Because in the process of having experimented, you're going to get more questions. And it is really unfair to be like, here's this revolutionary new technology. Thank you. Here's my invoice. They go do it. I have a bunch of questions. Oh, that's another session that you got to pay me for. I don't know. You got to bake those hours in. It strikes me as it would be very exploitative to operate that way. But yeah. Sorry, this is all to say tools are one thing, but actually it's the knowledge where I think people are not budgeting for right now.
And it's a huge opportunity, but I think it's like any other, like you're referring to earlier about these other disruptive moments of when social was a thing, you're paying social media consultants to come in and do the thing. So it's almost know what you're getting if you're going to be investing in professional development, to your point, so that there's structure that's more experimental and experiential as opposed to just, watch and listen.
And it could be worth it. This is up to the organization and probably based on the maturity and the size, but it is also probably worth it to just have kind of machine learning 101 for marketers. And that does not have to be any coding, any math, but it's very hard to use these tools and then understand their limitations and see beyond the quote unquote magic, unless you understand how they work. So like once you understand how a large language model tokenizes input and like what it's doing in the background, and again, you don't need the advanced discrete math and all of this, but then you know, like, oh, this is why this output is going to come out this way, and I should not trust it as like the gospel.
Right. Okay. All good stuff here. Good. I think there's a good foundational points and conversations we're having here in this section. And there's a lot of good takeaways here, including some of those tools that we'll link in the show notes. We'll take a quick break, come back, and then let's get into your thoughts on what's happening. What do we expect to be happening in the coming months? So we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. Hey there, Eric here, your host of the Marketing Careers Podcast. Now, I trust you're enjoying this episode that is focused on giving you some great insights and tips on how to navigate your disruption around Gen AI within your organization. Now, stay tuned, because when we get back to the episode, we're going to be tackling some thoughts on predictions and trends and things you can be prepared for in the future. But I just want to let you know, when we started the Marketing Help almost 10 years ago, we wanted to help marketers navigate their career. And since then, our mission has evolved really to focus on providing marketing career mentorship, plus also helping CMOs with CMO disruption advisory support. Now, as a collective, our entire team and myself, we've been helping marketers and marketing leaders navigate disruption for over 20 years. Starting with some of the earliest e-commerce, social, and mobile disruptions to the return to office remote team disruptions through the pandemic, and now supporting with the help of navigating this world of generative AI. So if you're a CMO or a marketing leader and looking for the playbook to help you and your team navigate this generative AI disruption, and maybe you need a little bit of some guidance or just some tools to get you started. And you don't want to take notes from all the episodes that you're listening to, so we made it easy for you. Just head on over to this URL, themarketinghelp.co/GenAI, G-E-N-A-I. You can also find the link in the show notes too, but there you'll find a free sample from our new book. We just released a book on Amazon titled CMO Disruption Playbook Generative AI. So we've extracted some value from that book, gave you a little free sample download that gives you some specific tips, a little bit of a checklist to help you make sure you're doing the right things to help you navigate your team's generative AI disruption. So check it out, themarketinghelp.co/GenAI. Listen, you don't want to navigate this disruption on your own. We wanted to help make it easier for you. So head on over to that URL, themarketinghelp.co/GenAI. Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts to make sure you're catching all the episodes from this season. All right, let's get back to the episode. Now we're going to focus on his thoughts and talk more about what we see happening in the coming weeks, months, days, years, as best we can, just based on our experience. So George, first question to you is, when you think back to that time, and like you said, you were in it early and you were learning about it early. We think about that first time where you realized that there was this thing of AI in a productive sense. We think about that moment up until where you are right now. Is there anything you would have done differently?
I mean, short of like going back to school for it, I don't know that there was a lot that you could have done, because for the most part, generative AI was an academic exercise. We as a general population had first contact with machine learning probably through social media algorithms, the recommendation engines. Like, that's all machine learning. I don't think it was made explicit at the time. But I think I just would have maybe tried to dive in a little deeper faster. I did have that cold sweat moment, and then it was probably a couple of months before I was like, okay, time to learn. And I think people are probably experiencing that now with ChatGPT. It's been out for a year. People are like, oh, I've tried it, but for the most part, a lot of usage has fallen off. They had sort of a huge uptick, and people are probably still, free members, but like, what is the daily usage has probably gone down because they're struggling to figure out how to work it into their process. The danger there for everyone listening is kind of a K-shaped economy, right? Where you have a bunch of people on the upswing who know how to use these tools. And then like, there's everyone else. And that is my greatest fear, is that you just have this rapidly expanding skills divide, and that should not be the case.
Right. So it basically, it's should have or wished to have dive deeper into the content or education back then, which I think is a good learning for those, like you said, that are in it right now, realizing, holy crap, this is something I should be using. Don't slight on or don't hold back on the learning. Dive deep. Dive wide, do whatever you got to do to get in and learn as much as you can. So the big question I have now is just about everything you've seen and just, great examples that you've shared already, but, applying it to forecasting out marketing roles, marketing teams, teams are more efficient. They've got their AI integrated into their processes to get 70% of the way there for some of the content creation. Mm-hmm. What does it look like 12 months from now when it comes to positions inside of a marketing team? What does that look like?
So this is true in cyber, but it is probably true everywhere else. So the reason we have had entire economies and companies organized around human specialization is because we have not had machines that can do it. This is all to say that two things are at work here. I think the future is where we evolve from requiring humans to do a lot of analysis in their jobs to doing much more orchestration, right? Because you're going to have the machines do the analysis. What that means is that if you are hyper-specialized, like you're a paid media specialist, you're incredibly vulnerable, because there is no denying that these machines will be able to do it better, faster, stronger, orders of magnitude more. And this is to be clear that there are many kinds of machine learning other than generative AI. Mm-hmm. And that's already happening. I think anyone who's been paying attention, the marketing agency world has sort of been shrinking either through consolidation, but also jobs, because so much more of these things can just be built into massive algorithms that take your ad creative and spin out several different variations. And that's going to get better. Like right now, there are humans who make variations for A/B testing. That is not a thing in the future, right? Then they will distribute that instead of humans deciding what, DSP to use or whatever. Like all of that decision-making can be done. So when you step back from that, it's like, how do you orchestrate your response to that as a marketer, as anyone in any part of a company? How do you basically get the machines to talk to the machines? So the future, as I say, is multidisciplinary. If you are in a marketing team, you better be talking to customer success. Customer success can no longer be seen as just part of sales, because all of the insights that they get from either QBRs or complaints or support tickets that is all data to be mined by marketing. I think to that end, we will see an increase in the amount of positions for customer marketing, because that kind of rich human contact and feedback has been very hard to integrate into marketing workflows to date, because it's very qualitative. And you're like, well, I got like hours of interviews, but how am I going to get through any of this? But like, these tools can now help you get through those transcripts. They can help you identify patterns much faster. So that is how you respond. It's like, okay, now I have more data. I have tools that can do something with that data, but it is the humans who need to make the decisions on the next step based on that data. So I think that's where we're going. I think we're going to see far less specialization. I would love to see more multidisciplinary teams, people who are as familiar with operations as they are with content creation, as they are with, I think you just need to be very multi-threaded to survive.
No, I think that's good perspective. And to that point, you kind of hinted on it, you know, because when there comes disruption, you know, with disruption, there's opportunity. So again, mm-hmm. I go, not that it's exactly the same, but we talked about the advent of social media. It caused the opportunity for social media managers to, or social media specialists to, you know, tackle that challenge. Are there new roles, not besides new titles, but are there new roles and responsibilities that are formed that 12 months from now, it's a job that someone's trying to fill that isn't around today? Like, is there a new role that's born from what you just described?
That's a good question. I'm less enamored with the idea of new roles as I am with the evolution of existing roles, right? Mm-hmm. So even in the last few years, we have seen the emergence of roles like marketing operations, because the tech stack is so huge, or revenue operations, as it is now sometimes called, being able to connect the data to get marketing closer to being able to attribute actual revenue. But I think a lot of those positions will just now interact more with AI tools than they do today. And so those people really need to raise their game on their knowledge of AI, because they're going to become these orchestration masters. But I, in terms of the evolution, I also think, again, there are sources of data that we have historically not looked at very closely. I mean, going back to this customer survey example, the reason we issue really dumb Qualtrics 0 to 5 scale surveys is because if you had 3,000 customers, there was no way to do anything with the data unless you could quantify it, like just graph it, right? But I think the blue sky for any marketer is to be able to sit down individually with customers and have a conversation and then be able to synthesize it. But it's very hard. I'm an anthropologist by training, so I favor this sort of anthropology of the customer. But now, imagine a world where I don't have to get an email. Look at how much friction is involved. Can you fill out the survey? I have to open the email. I have to like think about it. I have to be like, fine, click. I got to like work through your stuff. Like, there's so much there that I want to learn, but you're requiring so much of me. What if I could click a button and it just opens basically a recording and I could just talk at the computer, right? I mean, with the Whisper AI API through OpenAI, I don't think that's a problem, but I could just be able to say like, look, I love the product, but I really wish you would add this feature, and occasionally it crashes whenever I try to do this, but otherwise I love it, and hit end recording. But at massive scale, you now have the ability to analyze that you have as a marketer at your fingertips, probably. And this is just off-the-cuff example. You now understand the features at scale that people love the most, so maybe you need to tout those in your messaging. You understand pain points that you as the marketer, first touch with the customer, need to go back to the product team and say, like, please fix this. It's causing friction in our cycle. I obviously have been working in a lot of B2B SaaS, so maybe that's going to affect churn, or it's going to affect retention, you know, or these 500 people were really enthusiastic, and of them, 50 were like super gung-ho because we could tell in their sentiment and whatever else. So maybe we need to form a customer advisory board. I'm just saying, like, marketers are enamored with data. God, you cannot go to a marketing conference without data-driven whatever. But the data is sometimes super shallow, right? It's just like number of clicks here, number of whatever there. And there's all this rich data to be had, but has never been able to be extracted in any meaningful sense. And now you can. So I think I'm very much off the question now, but this is the soapbox, so I'm going to go for it.
Yeah.
If you are thinking about optimizing, you will always lose to the ones who think about transformation. Transformation will beat optimization every time, right? So optimization, you'll see marginal wins in the short term, but the people who can completely rethink how they ingest this data and then do stuff with it, they will leapfrog you. You will still be there trying to count your pennies, and they're just going to go take your customers from you. And so I think that's, I want to say less replacement and more like reimagining of a lot of these roles. But you're not going to get that unless people are aware of these capabilities, right? You need your customer success and your marketing team to understand like, oh, because of the Whisper AI protocol, we now have this ability. Are there tools that can do this? But they have to be able to spot those, and they can't spot those unless they know what's out there and understand the capabilities of that technology.
I like it. Yeah. And even in that summary of what you're saying, you know, about enabling marketers to evolve their existing roles, if there's a marketer listening today and says, hey, wait a minute, I want to be, you know, I want to get involved and develop myself so that I'm ready for whatever happens next, are there three, you know, call them skill areas that marketers should be looking to, you know, find that course or develop that specific skill? Now, whatever that skill is, whether it's a hard skill or soft skill, do any come to mind as you better polish these up in the next now?
Yeah, the next now. Yeah, so I have of late stopped calling them soft skills.
Yeah,
I think that denigrates them. I'm going to call them vital skills. So I think marketers are very well versed in managing up, right? When they need to ask for budget to run a new campaign or they have a new idea. But now that communication skill is going to have to run in both directions. You're going to need to make the case to senior leadership as to why you need to budget for professional development. Like literally, if you don't invest in your people, like you will be left behind by either competitors who do. And you will also need to be diplomatic in terms of messaging the capabilities and limitations of AI, right? So we talked very early about people getting this downward pressure of like, whatever you do, make sure it has AI in it. Well, if you don't understand the technology and its limitations, like you can't appropriately go back and say yes and or yes but, right? Like I can do this, but ultimately I believe as your marketing leader that we will double down on this kind of like human interaction and process, but we will, our plan is to use these tools in this way. And then messaging downwards or communicating downwards is being open and vulnerable, because I was just interviewing a CMO at a company and he was like, look, I'm not like the most in tune with social media and I'm not in tune with a lot of the new things because I'm busy managing like at, you know, the C level. But he is very open to learning from his Gen Z colleagues. He said on the podcast, they've taught me a ton and they're killing it. So I think if you have this hubris, you are done. If you are too proud to go down and ask the people who are probably experimenting, then you're a dinosaur. You need to be able to go back and interface with your direct reports and also learn from them and like foster that collaborative atmosphere. What have we learned this week? What have we learned this month? What do we want to try new next month? You know. So those are the vital skills I think you need. But in terms of the quote unquote hard skills, yeah, you 100% need a foundation in machine learning. And again, not just generative AI, because a lot of the tools you are using are going to have machine learning modules or implementations that you will extract more value out of them if you understand how to use them.
Got it. Good stuff. When you think about, you know, and you've seen this with companies you worked with, was it successful? Is it working? Is generative AI working? Is the rollout working? What are some examples of metrics that you've seen departments and companies use to measure the success of this? I'll say beyond efficiencies.
Yeah, I think it's probably pretty early days in terms of like, is there a paradigm that's been established for how to measure it? And since marketers are very enamored with outcome KPIs, it's probably, again, going back to your team and understanding like, okay, cool. So for example, I was able to make the case for Guide by saying, I literally measured the time it took me to make these two videos, and one takes me 26 minutes and one took me 6 minutes. And again, that 6 minutes is me using it for the first time. I can probably get it down to four. At that rate, I feel like I can efficiently scale this in order to get that. Right. And so I think being able to make the case for not, I mean, I think that's an efficiency play, and you said not just efficiency, but I wanted to make the case that I can serve customers better today because I can get more videos. And the more videos we have, the stickier the product will be, right? From a product marketing perspective, it doesn't do any good if you believe you have the best product and people get onboarded and then they either don't know how to use it or they're missing features. So being able to show that generative AI is helping me get to a place where I can serve the customer better, and then on the back end, be able to measure the interaction with those videos, I can still go back and say, like, the only way I was able to get those videos was at scale was using this tool. I think that's a very early win.
Right. So it's almost
In terms of like image generation, video generation, maybe you're thinking about like ways to measure the value of the tools as thought partners. Like, how quickly were you able to get new concepts out? Again, the output is not the output. The output is not the final product, but it's like, oh, you know, using Midjourney, we were able to get like multiple variations of concept art out in, you know, half the time it used to take us. And because of that, we were able to do this, that, and the other. Going back to the example of analyzing conversations, you know, with these new tools that I was testing, I was able to extract the following insights from over 300, you know, phone conversations that customer success had been having. I literally had never been able to do that. I think the problem with the measurement is you may not have a baseline, but you can at least, you know, make the case for why the tool is valuable.
And I guess I should answer, asking my question differently. It's almost like efficiency has to be embraced. And then from the efficiency comes the other metrics that a department has to be looking at, because if you're not using these tools and being more efficient, well, then that's a bad place to be. Yes. Something's wrong. But some good thoughts there. So last couple of questions here, just in terms of resources, our audience thirsty for knowledge, where should they be going to stay on top of, you know, the latest news on AI? Because, you know, there's a lot of things changing, a lot of things happening.
Yeah, that's a good question. There are a variety of newsletters. So Superhuman is a really good newsletter for just high level news on all kinds of new products. I think that's how I discovered Guide and all that's being built. I would shy away. I'm going to be contrarian and say, like, don't read marketing AI stuff, because it tends to get a little echo chambery. And again, if the future is multidisciplinary, you have to sort of see outside of that. You have to think outside of that. I would follow 404 Media. They're doing really good work in terms of investigative reporting around misuses or highly problematic areas that will help you think around the corner for risk elements and stuff like that. For books, I have a thing that I call the AI Mixtape Volume 1, which is just a list of resources to get you up to speed on sort of the 101 on machine learning and AI and generative AI in particular. So happy to share that.
Sure.
I guess it's just like you need to be very active within your community, whether that's, you know, cybersecurity marketing or whatever marketing, and just be skeptical, stay skeptical. That is not easy for marketers. We are very shiny object. We are very brand new toy, but there's a lot of snake oil out there. And again, to your point, if you just like race to get it and then you trip over your own shoelaces, or you end up spending more time trying to tune a prompt to get the output than just doing the work.
Right.
You know, these are landmines to avoid.
Okay. So last question here, just zooming out on the entire landscape of generative AI as you see it, thoughts, predictions in this space for the next year. If you think about the headlines that we see now, again, you know, from different aspects, legislation, AI Act in Europe, you know, Gemini doing its thing out of Google, you know, to your point of the integration of AI into tools. Now LinkedIn's got their AI helper that's, you know, in everybody's feed. You mentioned synthetic reality. I mean, wow. So all these things kind of mash together. Your thoughts on, you know, parting thoughts on AI and all that's happening. What do you see happening in the next 12 months?
Everything is going to get better, faster, stronger, right? The professor Ethan Mollick at UPenn said something that's quite prescient. And also on the face of it sounds obvious, but if you sit with it long enough is very sobering, which is the AI tools you use today will be the worst AI you ever use. So as incredible and as magical as some of these things can be, they will only get more capable and better. And that is to say, you should keep abreast of those things, but you should also really understand as a team, as a company, and maybe that is the work of marketers often trying to protect and create the brand. What is your company's values? So for all of the paid media you could generate with AI, for all of the algorithms behind the bidding process and all of that, in a world where that is sped up by everybody, real human connections, whether that's over customer support or holding real world events for your customers, like that's what's going to build trust. And so if that's your value, like your corporate brand value, build around that. Don't sort of build AI first and then go towards that. You need to really be grounded in your first principles and then think outward from that. But in the next 12 months, it's all the tools are going to become faster, but they also become smaller and more specialized, right? Like already, I saw a video yesterday where somebody's running an instance of Llama on like a Samsung smartwatch. Like that's how small they were able to get it. Mistral is doing incredible work in getting models that can run on very little compute with the same fidelity as GPT 3.5, which again, maybe 2 years ago, maybe even a year ago, people thought was impossible. This is all to say that the tools will become more specialized in the sense that maybe you can begin to build your own models internally at your company. I know a lot of businesses are excited about that because they're sitting on a ton of customer data and they don't really know how to organize it and they don't really want to dump it into a third-party model. Are there ways to build models just even into your department, like into the marketing department? That's probably going to be a conversation at the end of the next 12 months. But as those models shrink, that's where the thinking is going to go, is like, how portable can I make this and how can I use it and how multimodal can I do it? So I'll leave you with a story. For Cybersecurity Awareness Month, which is every October, I go into my kids' schools and they're of varying ages, but I went into a fourth grade classroom and I knew that I wanted to do something more than just read a book. I wanted to do what's called a red versus blue team exercise. Red team is you're trying to get in, blue team, you're trying to protect. So I was making dinner and I was using ChatGPT with voice and I was having essentially a conversation. And if no one has used ChatGPT with voice, the simulacrum is incredible. But I was like, okay, so I want a red versus blue team exercise. Let's build it around a castle for simplicity. Like, give me some ideas. And I'm here like chopping vegetables and having this, it's reading it back to me. I'm like, well, okay, let's settle on this idea of a castle. You know, give me an outline of an exercise that would take kids through, like half the class is going to be the red team, half the class is in a blue team. It's going to read it back to me. I was like, no, I don't like point three. Move that down and move point four up. I'm editing while cooking dinner with my voice. Right. So this is the promise of large language models, is having this natural language interaction. There's no hands-on keys. And it reads it back to me. And obviously in ChatGPT, everything that's being read out is also being transcribed. So great. Settle on the outline. Love it. Put it into like five slides. Okay. It sort of writes that out. I get off. We eat dinner. I come back. I take that outline. I put it into Gamma, builds the presentation, got an image from Midjourney. I timed this. I have a breakdown somewhere on LinkedIn, but the total time from idea to finished product that I could take into the classroom was 35 minutes.
Wow.
And so I say that, like, that's what the future is. Like, we're going to be talking to these machines. Look for ways to enable your customers to talk rather than type. Like, what is it that you can facilitate the idea to product that much faster and built around, you know, your values, and you'll probably be fine.
I love that example. And I think for audience, if you're listening to this and you hear that example that George just gave and you're excited and you want to say, okay, I'm going to try that too, congratulations. If you're scared and you're thinking like, oh my gosh, I wouldn't even know where to start. Well, then maybe it's time to kind of get outside your comfort zone a little bit more and start embracing tinkering with some of these tools, because I think you said it really well, and just in terms of painting the picture of how easy it is for us to interact. And I like the idea of let's make voice more prominent as opposed to friction, more friction with the typing and the keyboards and the tapping and everything else. But great insights.
When I talk to my friends outside of tech, they're like, oh yeah, I heard about ChatGPT, and I was like, okay, whatever. But I was like, your kids need to know about this. This is like going into the workforce and like not knowing how the internet works.
Yes. Yes.
That's how paramount it is.
Great point. Now, if our audience wants to continue the conversation with you, what's the best place or best way for our audience to connect with you?
Yeah. So I'm on LinkedIn. That's really the only place that feels safe enough to be on these days. Sure. And so they can find me there. And I have a podcast called Bare Knuckles and Brass Tacks. It is particularly about cybersecurity marketing and sales, but it's generally applicable to all B2B sales. So I'm George on the product side. My co-host is George, who's a chief information security officer. So he's on the buyer side. And it's been a lot of fun having sales, marketing, and buyers on to talk about like the trust divide, because I think that's really what needs to be solved with some of these tools.
Love it. So I will share links to both those things in the show notes. But George, really appreciate your time. Great insights. I think this has been some insights we haven't heard just yet in this series, but do appreciate it. I think our audience is going to love sinking their teeth into some of these tools a little bit more. So appreciate your time today, and best of luck in the coming year with everything tied to your projects and your podcast.
Thanks. It's been a blast. Thank you for having me.
All right. Big thanks to George for sharing all his thoughts in this episode. What I tell you, right? George is definitely someone you should be following to stay in tune with a lot of great things, especially what's happening in the AI space. He gave a ton of great resources you should be checking out in the show notes. But think about it, right? So George's points about we're moving from content creators to orchestrators. I think being a multidisciplinary marketer is a must. Especially, it doesn't mean you can't have a specialty, but it does mean you need to be more aware of what the touch points are and where there could be some interesting information that you could be leveraging as a marketer who's navigating this disruption with Gen AI. So check out the show notes. A lot of great things there for you to uncover, explore, leverage, and test. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And this is your host, Eric Harbison, and I will catch you on the next episode.